let's continue on with talking about false friends and good friends. So the Buddha talked about this 2600 years ago, and it still holds true today. So when we're trying to follow a real spiritual path and a Dharma path, the friends we have are very important because they encourage certain traits in us. And I remember one of my first teachers, Geshe-no Andarge, he used to say that we usually think that bad friends, you know, maybe they have horns on their head or they're looking at us ferociously, you know, ready to harm us. But he said, actually not. That the most harmful friends are people with a smile on their face who seem to really care for us. Yeah? But because they don't have good ethical conduct, because they are living as if this life were the only experience and karma doesn't exist and liberation doesn't exist because they don't know about these things or care about these things, then they think the happiness of this life is all there is. And because they care about us and want us to be happy, they want us to have the happiness of this life. But as we discussed yesterday, when we're completely enveloped with the happiness of this life and get attached to it, then we wind up creating negative actions and spending a lot of time doing things that aren't really very productive in the long run. Mm-hmm. And when we're, the more attachment we have, then the more anger we have, and the more harsh words we say, and so on and so on. You know, so he said that the people, you know, we can't just trust superficial appearances. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, lots of times when I lead retreats, people will, like if it's a week-long retreat or a month-long retreat, people will say, well, when I told my friends or colleagues at work that I was going on this, they looked at me and they said, well, why are you going to do that? You know, sit on a cushion and look at your belly button. You know, why don't you get a life? Do something interesting. Go to the Bahamas, go scuba diving, go to the Alps and go skiing. You know, go to the disco, go have a good time. What are you going to sit on a cushion for with your eyes closed? Okay? So these people, when they say stuff like that to us, they mean well, don't they? You know, because from their viewpoint, happiness is doing all these other things. Yeah? But from the viewpoint of a spiritual practitioner, somebody who really holds liberation or enlightenment in their spiritual practice as something really important in their life, then these other kinds of things, they aren't first rate. They're kind of much lower on the list. Okay? But then often, because of peer pressure, and because we want to fit in, you know, and we don't want our friends to think we're weird, then we often listen to the advice of these people who mean well, but they just don't understand karma and the situation of samsara. Okay? So it's something to be attentive to. In any case, I think when the Buddha was talking here in the Sigalavada Sutra, he might just even have been talking about, you know, in the kind of regular friendships. You know, what he's saying here is not only for people who are spiritual practitioners, but just regular people, you know, who just want to have a happy life. Okay, so the first kind of false friend are those who come empty-handed but leave with something. Okay? So they visit us with the intention of taking our things. Yeah, they come over and, oh, that's such a pretty, you know, seashell you have. Where did you get it? Where can I get something like that? Hint, 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 give it to me. Okay? Okay, these people give us a little but expect to receive a lot in return. So when it's our birthday, they give us a little present. But then when it's before their birthday, they let us know it's their birthday and they let us know what they want. These people help us only when they're in danger. So when they need help, then they come around, but when we need help, we don't see them. And they associate with us only out of selfish motives. So they want to be close to us because we can do something for them. Yeah? Maybe they need money, so they, you know, become friends and then ask for a loan. Maybe they think that we're important and influential and know other people that they can benefit from meeting, so they come around and, you know, want us to introduce us to those people. Or, you know, who knows what, but it's they're coming for their self-benefit, not out of genuine care. But like I was saying at the very beginning, I don't know about you, but when somebody comes and says nice, sweet things about me, I shut down and, you know, forget my discriminating mind and, you know, follow whatever they say. So that's how we get entrapped by people like this, because we, you know, we lose our discrimination. Okay, so then the second kind of false friend. And when I'm talking about this, we want to look at it not only from the viewpoint of people we know who come to us to be friends, but when do we go to other people as false friends? When do these very same traits apply to us and we're using people and not being genuine? Okay, second kind of false friend. Those who pay us lip service and whose friendship is only skin deep. So, what do these people do? They entertain us and waste our time by talking of the past. So, where did you go on holiday last year? And what did you see? And what did you buy? And, you know, how was that great thing that you did? And, you know, did you see the football game last weekend? And, okay, so we spend lots of time talking to these people. Okay? They entertain us and waste our time by talking about the future. Have you heard about the latest movie that's coming out? Let's go see it. You know, it's very controversial, and let's see how it's relating to the last film that producer did. And everybody's talking about it. We want to go see it. Okay, they try to gain our favor by offering help when help isn't needed. Yeah, I do this a lot. You know, so when you can see that the meal is almost ready, then you go in the kitchen and say, do you need any help? Okay. When the dishes are almost done, then you go in and say, do you need any help cleaning up? Yeah. When things are, you know, when people don't really need help, then they're there ready to help. Okay. You just got done moving and then they say, oh, can I help you? Move. Oh, you need this table moved here. Yes, I'll help you. You know, but when we really needed them, they weren't gone. And when we ask for help, they give excuses and don't help. I'm so busy. I have so many things to do. I'm very sorry. I made this commitment a long time ago. I can't help you. Okay. This is our famous American excuse, okay? The inviolable excuse that works for all occasions when you don't want to do something is you just say, I'm too busy. And it's extremely impolite to say, you're too busy doing what? We're not allowed to say that. It's so rude to ask somebody, what are you too busy doing that's more important than what I'm suggesting? Okay. Oh, we cannot ask that. People just do not like that. Yeah? And so that's our famous excuse. I don't have time. And then the next best excuse, at least darn practice, and many other things, is I don't have the money. Okay. I have money to buy lattes. I have money to buy new clothes. Forget the fact that my closet is stuffed with clothes. I always have money to buy myself some new clothes or another sweater or some shoes or a new shirt or some pants. I have money to go on holiday, but I don't have money to go to teachings. I don't have money to go to retreat, even though everything's done on a Donna basis and nobody charges, you know, at least where we are in the Abbey. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have money. You know, but meanwhile, kind of money's all over the place, having pleasure. And then the same thing, you know, with time. I don't have time. I've worked so many hours. And then I have my family obligations. You know, so my life is so busy. You know, I have to do this. I have to do that. Now, the only thing we actually ever have to do is die. You know, everything else we're choosing to do. I don't have time to practice the Dharma. I mean, it'd be much more honest if people said, I'm choosing not to practice the Dharma. You know, let's at least be honest with ourselves. You know, I'm choosing not to do X, Y, and Z because I think A, B, and C is more important. Yeah, instead of I have to do A, B, and C, so I really want to help you, but I can't. Or I have to do this, and I really want to practice the Dharma, but, you know, I'll have time later. You know, assuming that we're not going to die for another 15 eons. So, okay. Yeah, when we ask for help, they give excuses, and they don't help. What's funny about Dharma practice is we're not even asking them to help. It's like, you know, our teachers are trying to benefit us and we fight them every inch of the way. You know, I'm too busy. I'm too busy. Can't get that Dharma book. It's too expensive. But we always have money and time for lots of other stuff. So, I don't know. I just think it's much... It has a quite different effect on us if instead of saying, I have to do this, if we say, I'm choosing to do this. Yeah? Because then we're owning our responsibility. I'm choosing this. It's not that I have to. I'm choosing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not, even on things that we really feel we have to do, like I have to go to work, actually, we're choosing to go to work. I think it changes how we look at our life if we say, I'm choosing to do these things, rather than I have to, as if somebody else is controlling our life. And then sometimes it makes us also be honest about what we're choosing to do. I'm choosing to watch television. You know, all day on Saturday. I'm choosing to watch TV every evening. How would we feel if we met somebody who said that they chose to watch television every evening? Well, that's what we're doing. Is that really a choice that we want to do? What we want to make? Okay. So I just think it brings more honesty in our lives. Okay, here we go. Another false friend. Those who flatter us, seeming to care for us when they actually don't. Okay, these are the ones that's easy to fall. So they encourage us to act negatively. Yeah. Oh, come on, invest in this business. It's really good. You know, we have it all worked out so that we don't have to pay all the taxes on it, on and on and on. And we, you know, get involved in a bad business deal or doing something illegal or something deceptive. They discourage us from acting positively. You don't want to drink. Everybody at this party is drinking. Are you some kind of Buddhist prude or something? I have so many people come and tell me that they only drink because they feel this kind of social pressure, you know? And when they go to parties or out with their business colleagues, they feel like they have to drink because otherwise everybody's going to think that they're weird if they don't drink. So, because so many people tell me this, I often wonder if at parties nobody wants to drink, but everybody's drinking because they think the other people think they should drink. Yeah? And I find it very interesting how people find it so incredibly difficult. It's like You're asking them to kill a person, you know, when they say, I just can't say I'd rather have orange juice. You know, I can't say that. You know, I mean, really, it's like people react as if, you know, really, you're asking them to do some kind of horrible, dreadful, painful thing by being different than everybody else. Well, I'm going to have orange juice, or I'm not going to smoke the joint. I'm going to sit here and talk to you anyway. Or actually, I don't feel like being around you when you're smoking a joint. You know, when you stop being high, come over and let's talk. You know? So it's so interesting to talk to people. And hear this, and it's you know, just kind of regular people I hear this from all the time, all the time. Okay, so the people who flatter us, seeming to care for us when they actually don't, they praise us in our presence. Okay, so they better us up, and they criticize us behind our backs. So when we're around, oh, you're so nice, you're so kind, and blah. And then when we're not there, they trash us. And so sometimes we may do that to other people too. But then eventually they find out about it. Like we usually eventually find out about it when somebody's doing it with us. Okay, so another kind of false friends are those who lead to our ruin. Okay? So these are people who are our companions in drinking or taking drugs. Okay, they roam the streets with us when it's late. They accompany us to see unwholesome entertainment. So don't make friends with any of the people on the Duke lacrosse team. And they go gambling with us. Okay, so these are people, you know, this is what they find entertaining. They're friendly, you know, they think that this is what is involved in friendship. And so they want us to come do all these things with them because that's what they think friendship is about and entertainment is about. But actually, we wind up getting in a lot of trouble. Yeah, the inmates that I work with, I would say 99% of them were on were high on alcohol or drugs when they did what wound them up in prison. It's quite astounding. Yeah. So, you know, you never think you're going to wind up with any kind of prison charge, but you never quite know what happens when you do certain things. Okay, so here it's very good to do some reflection about what kind of people we're attracted to, who we let influence us, when we fall for things. If any of our friends do this kind of stuff, and then, you know, well, what's behind it, and, you know, why are we friendly with them, and what are the results of the friendship? So to do some examination on that. And then also to look and really be honest with ourselves, and when are we this kind of false friend to somebody else? Now, when do we butter up somebody and praise them and say nice, sweet things because we want them to introduce us to somebody who's really important? Or because we want them to write us a letter of recommendation, or we want them to loan us some money, or, you know, we want something from them. Okay. And when do we actually act as a bad influence on other people? Instead of acting as a good influence on them. Okay, so there's a lot to think about here. And it might be a little button pushing. Is it button pushing? Okay, then good-hearted friends. So these are the kind of people we want to form friendships with. So those are people who help us. So they guard us when we're careless or not paying attention. So, you know, when we are not paying attention to what we're doing, we're not thinking properly, are making decisions properly, we're not being mindful and aware, then they protect us and they maybe point out to us what's happening and our need to have some awareness and to make wise decisions. They might also be backseat drivers. We usually hate backseat drivers, but, you know, sometimes they may know the road better than we do and, you know, might be willing to help us. I drive in the car with so many people, you know, because I travel a lot. And some people, they get lost. They will not ask for directions. Yeah, I won't say which gender this applies to mostly, but they will not ask for directions. Yeah, and we drive in circles, and I'm usually like so exhausted, you know, because I've been driving. Oh, we're almost there. Yeah. So sometimes it's helpful to have backseat drivers or people who know the road or ask and stop for directions. That, you know, that's one type of thing. Here, we're, you know, it's also just in general when we're not paying attention in our lives and interpreting things in an incorrect way. You know, like sometimes we might get in a bad mood and really start picking on another friend or, you know, on a spouse and just pick at them and complain about them, you know, to another friend. And maybe that friend needs to point out to us, you know, hey, but they're also being, you know, this person you're complaining about is also being very kind and they also have many good qualities and maybe it's not so wise that you're so dissatisfied all the time. You know, so people who try and point out things to us that we're not aware of. Okay? The people who protect our possessions. You know, so when we're away, they watch over our stuff. They feed the cat. They feed the dog. They help us out, take in the mail. They help and console us in times of fear or grief. Okay? So if we're grieving over something, those people come and they console us. And like I was saying before, sometimes consoling people doesn't involve knowing the quote-unquote right things to say. It's more just being there. Yeah? And usually after somebody dies, a lot of friends will come around like in the first week or something. And then after the funeral, they all stop. Meanwhile, you know, the person who's bereaved is still grieving for, you know, quite a long time in the future. But other friends sometimes aren't very sensitive to that. You know, and that's the time when they really need some support and somebody saying, you know, can I cook you lunch or can I do some shopping for you or take you places? Yeah. Okay. So they help and console us in times of fear, in times of grief. Yeah, when we need help, they're around. And they give more than asked for when we request their help. Okay. So unlike the other person who always had excuses not to help, this person, when we do ask for help, you know, then they give even more than we've asked for, you know. We might need help, you know, carrying the bed into the truck to move it somewhere, but they'll like not only do that, they'll get in the truck and help us unload it at the other end, even though we didn't ask for that. Okay, so people who really care and go out of their way, and you know, these people are quite precious. I remember one time many years ago, one of my parents' dearest friends had just died, and this woman had been a friend of the family ever since I can remember. And so my parents were, you know, really grieving about it. And I happened to be coming through, you know, where they were. Of course, her death wasn't planned, you know, but I happened to be in town when she had died. And I wanted to go to the funeral to be there for, you know, all these people. And one of my friends volunteered to take me there. Yeah. And, you know, she didn't know these people. It was like several hours out of her day that she just volunteered to drive me there so that I could go there. And when I saw my parents there and I told them about this, my mom made a comment, something like, you know, to the effect, well, we just lost our dearest friend, so this person who took you here is a really dear friend and cherish them. So, you know, people who really, they go out of their way. And, you know, they care. And you know that, you know, you can count on them. Okay, so good friends are also people who care for us in good times and bad. So they aren't just fair weather friends. So they confide in us. Yeah, they share with us what they're thinking, what's going on in their lives. That's very different than complaining to us or dumping their problems on us. But they, you know, they share. They keep what we tell them confidential. I think that's really important, you know, because when we sometimes are working out a certain problem or, you know, we're upset about something and we go to them with some advice to help us, you know, to get their advice and ask them to help us see the situation more clearly. We don't want them afterwards going and blabbing everything that we told them to everybody else. Yeah? But we want to know that when we need to talk and we need some help, that we can confide in them and that it stops there and it doesn't go beyond. So I think keeping people's confidences is very, very important. And, I think it's very important. And it's so tempting not to, because, you know, we'll be talking with some other friends and, you know, checking up how so-and-so doing, and we have one piece of juicy information because our friend confided that in us, you know, and it's so tempting to kind of like, you know, tell everybody else because it's, you know, it's something new and, yeah. But just to refrain and say, oh, yeah, that person's okay, instead of, you know, telling us what they told us in confidence. And even sometimes when people don't say to us, oh, please don't tell anybody else, just recognizing on our own what is sensitive information and not spreading it to others when it could cause damage, either to the person we say it to or the person who told us. Yeah, developing some kind of sensitivity there. On the end...
I'm sorry, what about sharing that information with someone with the intent to help the person? I mean, that's what
I was going to say. Yeah. So sometimes somebody tells us something, and we do, and we know that if... we tell somebody else, that other person may be able to help that person. Okay? So in that kind of case, where our motivation is very clear, then I think it's okay to go ahead and tell them. Yeah? You know, sometimes in the effort to stop gossiping, I know some people say, you know, never talk about anybody who's not present in the room. Okay, that's the best way to stop gossiping. I don't quite agree with that, because if you never talk about anybody who isn't there, then there's no way of transferring important information, you know, without that person being there. There would be no way to ask a prospective employee to ask for a reference from that prospective employee if you couldn't ask them without the person being there. There would be no way for parents to talk about what's happening with their child if they had to do it in front of the child. There would be no way for a parent and a teacher to talk about how to benefit a child. So there are certain situations where it's definitely better to talk about somebody who's not present and to share, you know, somewhat confidential information. I remember one time of many years ago, I was at a Dharma center, and my teacher didn't live there. You know, he would travel around, and the network of centers was under, you know, he was the spiritual guide, and he would only come from time to time. And he came to a certain place, and he was asking me how people were, and of course the people who were well, I had no problem kind of saying, oh, they're fine, this and this. And then he asked me about one person who had really been not behaving so well, and I thought, oh, I don't want to say anything, because it's like, you know, talking badly about somebody to their teacher, and, you know, I don't want to do that kind of stuff. But then he pushed me, and he said, no, you need to tell me. Yeah, you need to tell me. And then I realized, yeah, I do need to tell him, because that way he has the information to be able to benefit that person. It's not like telling him, you know, he's going to use the information for his advantage, because his whole purpose is to be of benefit, okay? And so then I told him what the situation was. So, it kind of stuck in my mind that there are times where it is important to talk about delicate information when there is the intention to help somebody else. Okay, so they keep what we tell them confidential. Then they don't forsake us when we're troubled or face calamity. Yeah. So some people, you know, when we're going through a hard time and we need to talk about it, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, somebody else just came over, I have to talk to them. Yeah, they're nowhere near when we need to talk to them, or when we're facing difficulties. Yeah, they're nowhere to be seen. You know, they may have the skills to help us, they may know somebody who can, but they're nowhere to be seen at that time when we really need help. Okay? But these people don't forsake us when we're troubled, and they don't forsake us when we face a calamity, but they're there, and they stand beside us, and they help us. You know, they are able to keep some distance, you know, and similarly for us when we help our friends. There's a distance in the sense that we don't want to get as emotionally involved and overwhelmed as they are about their problem, but we can still help them without getting that, you know, without going on overwhelm. So similarly, these people, when they help us, they don't go on overwhelm, but they're there, and, you know, we can trust them. And these are people who would even sacrifice their lives for us. So that's quite a friendship. Or on a lesser level, maybe we could say they would sacrifice their own well-being for us. You know, maybe they had a vacation plan, but they decide not to go because they can see that we're really in bad straits and need some companionship. Yeah? So these people are ready to give up their own pleasure or their own temporary happiness in order to benefit their friends. This is something to look at, you know, for ourselves. Are we, you know, how are we like that when our friends need something? And are we ready to sacrifice our own happiness or what we want to do or our plans or what we feel like doing in order to be of service and benefit to somebody who really needs it at that time? Okay, the third kind of good friend are those who encourage us in a positive direction and cause us to become better people. So they dissuade us from doing negative actions. Yeah, so we might be sitting there complaining about somebody else and talking badly about somebody else behind their back. And instead of just joining them in a conversation of bad-rapping that person, they might turn and say, you sound pretty upset and angry about it. What's happening with you? Instead of, you know, tell me more bad stuff about somebody else, it's like, what's happening with you that you're so upset? Yeah. And so in that way, pulling us away from negative actions and helping us to really solve our problems. Okay, or when we're about to do something really stupid, they remind us of our precepts, they remind us of good values, they remind us of promises and commitments we've made, they give us recommendations and say, you know, I almost did that, or I did do that, and it's not good to do. Yeah, so they, in one way or another, dissuade us from doing something that could potentially be harmful to us, even though we don't see it as harmful at that time. Okay? They persuade us to do positive actions. So They might say, you know, I'm making a donation to a charity. You want to go in with me on it, and we'll give it to so-and-so as their birthday present. You know, I think this thing of making donations to charities instead of getting birthday presents and Christmas presents and stuff, I think this is fantastic. You know, because especially in our country, people already have more than enough. Yeah. And it's so hard to get them something that they're really going to appreciate because, you know. So what a wonderful thing is to give to a charity, you know, to a Dharma center, to a monastery, to, you know, a homeless shelter, to a, you know, an AIDS hospice, to a foundation for cerebral palsy, whatever it is, you know, give, make a donation and then dedicate it for somebody else. So this is a friend who will encourage us to do that. Yeah. Or a friend who at Christmas time says, you know, don't get me anything, but make a donation here. Yeah, instead. And I think that's quite beautiful when people do that. Okay, so this is a person who also might say, you know, I'm going for teachings, you want to come along? Or I'm going on a retreat, a course, you want to come along? It's really interesting. No, you don't have to be a Buddhist, and no, your back and your legs won't ache that much. You know, they have breaks, and you can stand up and stretch, and, you know, just come along, and you might learn something. And no, I'm not trying to convert you, and, you know, but, or sometimes giving Dharma books to friends. Yeah, I think that can be very, very beneficial to people. You know, you can see somebody searching, or that they're going through a hard time, and you just leave a Dharma book hanging around, and, you know, they pick it up, or you actually gift them a book. I think that can be very helpful for other people. Okay, so they encourage us to do positive actions. When we're being a good friend to others, we encourage them to do things that create, you know, a virtuous mental state. Okay, they cause us to listen to beneficial teachings. Okay, so I jumped ahead of myself. They, you know, bring us to Dharma talks. They give us Dharma books. They encourage us. You know, they say, oh, you know, because sometimes we have the most incredible excuses why we can't go to Dharma things. You know, my stomach hurts. Yeah, my stomach hurts. Is that really a reason not to go to Dharma events? Yeah, I mean, it won't stop us from going out to a movie just because our stomach hurts. We'll still go out to a movie. We'll still go to work. We'll still do a lot of things. Yeah. So this kind of person will say, oh, forget it, you know, just come. Because I have this interesting experience whenever I don't feel well, if there's a Dharma event scheduled, if I go to it, I always leave feeling better. Always, 100% of the time. And I think the situation for me is quite different when I'm in the role of teaching, because then how I feel has no relevance on anything. Okay? You know, the audience who comes, oh, I stubbed my little toe, I can't come, my stomach hurts, I can't come, you know, I need to clean the bathroom tonight, you know, I haven't done it in so long, I've really got to do it tonight, so I can't come. You know, all these kinds of things. I can't do that. Doesn't matter, I'm sick, I don't feel well, I'm exhausted, I've got to show up if, you know, people are coming to hear the Dharma. And so it's a really interesting thing to watch what happens when you do that. Because you get your body there, and then as soon as you get involved in the Dharma, whatever it was that you didn't feel well about, you know, it's not there anymore. So I've really learned that from my own personal experience. Okay, and so these are people who indicate to us the path to happiness. You know, when we talk about a spiritual teacher, the actual phrase in Tibetan is shenyen, and it means, if you translate it, it means a virtuous friend. Okay? So it's a friend in virtue, a friend who is virtuous, somebody who's teaching you, who's encouraging you on the path, who, you know, you can talk about what's going on in your practice with. Yeah. So these are the kind of friends that are very, very precious. And, you know, why I think Dharma friends, you can see even, you know, we've known each other not even 48 hours, but you can see the value of the kind of friendship that's beginning to come even in this group. Yeah. Because of people sharing the Dharma together and helping each other in the Dharma. Okay? So, other kinds of good friends, they're compassionate and sympathetic. So these are people who sympathize with us in times of adversity. That doesn't mean that they jump into our ball game and go along with our pity party. Okay? They indulge our self-pity. But they do sympathize and they understand what we're going through, and so that opens the door for us to be able to be more honest about our experience and discuss it with them and, you know, see what feedback they have about it. These are people who rejoice at our prosperity and fortune without being jealous. I think that's another precious quality. You know, because some people, when we happen to be prosperous or we have some talent or ability, they get so jealous and they can't endure it. Yeah? And it's really hard to maintain a friendship with people who are jealous of you, isn't it? Yeah? And so a good friend is really somebody who can rejoice when we have a good opportunity, when we have a talent or ability, when we do something virtuous. You know, somebody who really genuinely feels happy for us without any kind of jealousy. Now, that's a very special kind of person. You know, especially now when our society is so competitive and we grow up competing with everybody. And it's really not very healthy. So somebody who can look and say, that's fantastic, you know? You got the promotion. I'm really happy for you. Or you got a pay raise. Or, you know, you got to go on this Dharma event. Or you were, you know, you created such positive potential through your actions. You know? And somebody who really encourages us in that way and feels happy. So there are also people who dissuade others from speaking ill of us. So if they happen to be somewhere and somebody starts gossiping about us, they stop that person and say, I think maybe you don't have the full story here. You know, and this is actually what's happening. This is, you know, this person's real intentions. Because sometimes you might like a person, then you hear somebody else say bad things about them, and then you go, oh yeah, tell me, you know. And then other times you go, I don't want to hear, even if it's something actually we need to know because the person isn't acting so well. You know? So it's like, it's a sensitive situation, you know, when we are with somebody who is saying something about somebody else that we care for. Because sometimes it is information we need to wake up and hear and listen to. Okay? And other times we can see that somebody's just maligning somebody and gossiping and complaining, and you can see that they're very spiteful by how they say it. And in that case, we really need to say no. You know, don't talk about that person like this. You're not seeing the picture clearly. So each situation is a little bit different here, you know, how we react. But very often, you know, we can pick up, by how somebody's saying it, whether they are giving us this information because they really care or because they're just gossiping and trying to create division and problems, or, you know, thinking that they're important because they have the latest nasty thing to say about somebody else. So we can need to kind of evaluate that. Okay, so they dissuade others from speaking ill of us, and they praise those who speak well of us. Yeah. So when somebody, you know, says something kind about us, they say, yeah, that person does have that quality. So these are all things for us to look at for ourselves, you know. Are we that kind of friend to somebody else? Do we encourage them to do what is proper and what is suitable? And when somebody says unfair, ridiculous gossip about them, you know, do we intervene and stop it? And when somebody praises them, do we join in and feel happy and praise them also? So while in spiritual practice, receiving praise is something that we don't want to get attached to and we don't want to seek, in terms of our giving praise, that's something we should definitely do. You know, because it's very important for us to be able to, first of all, see others' good qualities and actions, and then overcome our own pride and competitiveness enough to speak about them and really praise somebody else behind their back, and also praise people to their face. In other words, when somebody is doing something well, to point it out to them. Because so often we point out negative things. And I think especially with kids, you know, to take care about this. Some parents, I think they trained as drill sergeants instead of as parents. You know, the way they talk to their kids is like a drill sergeant talking to the newly enlisted. You know, wake up! 6 o'clock, wake up, kid. Now, go brush your teeth, wash behind your ears, get ready, we're late for work, we're late for school, get in the car, put your seatbelt on, no, don't play with your sister. And all you hear is just, you know, orders one after the other, okay? Or when a child does something wrong, they say, you're such a bad boy, you're such a bad girl. That kind of language gives a child absolutely no useful information, except that the parent isn't pleased with them. They don't know what they did. They just, you know, because kids don't. We assume that they should know what they did, that we're displeased, but we just say, you're so bad, you know. And kids don't necessarily know. So I think it's much more effective to say, you know, when you leave your stuff all over the floor and I trip on it when I walk in the room, it's really inconvenient and I'm really unhappy, and I appreciate it so much when you clean up your room because it makes it easier for everybody in the house. You know, that way the kid knows at least what you're unhappy with or what you are happy with. Yeah? Oh, you took out the trash today. That's good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah? And so I think with everybody, actually, not just with kids, is being able to tell them quite specifically what they did that you admire. Yeah? Because it gives them a lot of useful information. Okay, so all of these are things to think about when we choose friends, and things to think about in terms of the kind of friend we want to be for other people.